Greetings and welcome to episode 6 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. And boy, oh boy, do we have a fun-filled show for you today. An extra-long show, just jam-packed with so much fun. That's going to be coming to you right now. Coming up at the end of the show, I will be announcing the winners of the Snow White VHS contest, as well as announcing a new contest. So we're just nonstop contesting it up around here. But this episode's main event is that we are going to be looking at the creepiest parts of Walt Disney's Fantasia. It's time for another round of the creepiest film, and for the first time, I have a special guest, Mr. Derek Bergen.
Howdy.
How you doing?
We're doing good down here. It's actually cold in Florida, chilly 60 degrees, freezing. I might
say. 60 degrees sounds like paradise. I'm up in New Jersey, and... Yeah, in one day it went from 57 to 7 degrees, so I'm not fun over here. So Derek is from the Pardon the Pixie Dust podcast. How would you describe what you do over there on that show?
For people who have heard of ESPN's Pardon the Interruption, it's two guys basically looking at the weekly news in a quick format, you know, nothing longer than 3 or 4 minutes. And we debate Universal, Disney, SeaWorld, and theme park issues in a similar fashion with hopefully a slight sense of humor compared to the rigidly stuffy and serious theme park podcasts that seem to exist out there.
To say the least, yeah. Good. You also write for the touringplans.com blog?
Yep, touringplans.com. Check it out in their blog. Every week I do the Saturday Six, and then once a month I do photo reports of the Disney Outlet store with another bent towards sarcasm, I guess you could say it, which Disney fans have criticized as being too mean. But these are products that even Disney fans wouldn't buy, so you can imagine how bad they were. And other miscellaneous food reviews and other things on the blog. So check it out if you get a chance.
Cool. Now, I actually discovered you from another podcast that you were on, Universal Now. And
what? The leading Universal podcast in the world.
Yes, number one. And one of the things right away, I enjoyed, as soon as I discovered it, I gravitated to it. I thought the four of you guys have a great dynamic. But one of my favorite things that you used to do on that show was something called Theme Park Pipe Bomb.
And it needed to be done, but I
have you well, explain it real quick what that is.
That was referring to a famous wrestling interview. They call them promos, but for sake of people who don't know wrestling, called interview that happened a couple years ago now with the wrestler CM Punk, who, you know, quote unquote, broke the fourth wall by dropping what he called a pipe bomb, and it was basically breaking character in a wrestling show. And so I kind of brought that format to the theme park podcast, where I just ripped on stuff that I think everybody thought about, but just no one was saying. Like the overabundance of Disney moms and the Disney company catering to them, even though clearly it's, you know, young kids and teenagers and young adults of all of us, the podcaster community, that are supporting this, the foundation of this company. We're the ones buying the merch and going to these restaurants and seeing these movies and buying these DVDs, but they're catering everything to this minority of Disney moms who blog. So that was one of them. How about the? Don't let me start. I was going to go off the Mickey check and go into a complete healthy eating, despite all evidence elsewise that people do not want that.
Well, the thing that I liked about it was it was the first time I can remember listening to a Disney podcast where we actually talked about other Disney podcasts. It seemed like all the other ones like to pretend that no other ones exist.
Right.
And it made me right away I connected going like these guys listen to the same shows that I do because they're talking about them. You know, that's what I like about this new wave of podcasts right now is that we've kind of decided like we like certain things about some of them, but we don't have to accept just what they're doing. We can come in and do our own thing.
Yeah, I always found it bizarre when they would kind of talk about, say, media events they'd went to, and they never mentioned other people that were there. But you know they were there because you've read all these reports online, and they just ignore every other part of the community.
Right.
It was just strange. What we brought it was more like the Attitude Era of wrestling. I'll bring it back to there again. Mm-hmm. Where all of a sudden, the WWE started acknowledging these other companies. It was mind-blowing. You're like, there's a whole other world out there, and it's more exciting when you realize they all exist together and not these isolated little podcasts.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. So we're just going to keep on paving the way of working together. And
that's right. We're a community.
A real, real community. All right, cool. Well, we're going to get into this. The film we will be reviewing tonight is Fantasia.
Walt Disney Pictures presents the 50th anniversary of an all-time animated masterpiece. Fantasia. The most incredible musical fantasy ever is back. This fall, you're invited to experience the breathtaking beauty. Wonderful adventure. The very special magic. And the electrifying power of one of the most spectacular entertainment events of all time. It's a motion picture you will never forget. Now, with a completely restored picture and soundtrack, it's the 50th anniversary of Walt Disney's classic, Fantasia, a symphony in sight and sound.
Oh. Oh, the bell. I was so excited. I was hoping to ring the bell, out. Joe.
Oh, my God. That was my problem. I asked your original pitch was you're going to talk about Universal. I'm like, uh-huh. Well, let's cover a Disney movie like your other themes have been, and that was a mistake. I thought you were going to pick a good one.
Well,
joke's on me.
We're going through them chronologically. So, and let me tell you, there's a lot of crap to get through. This is a personal challenge that I'm doing, and you.
Is this punishment? Are you like one of those religious guys who like tightens the belt around their leg and whips themselves? And this is your version of that because you can't man up?
No, I want to see them all. I want to know. I want to be able to say I watched them all. And
that's going to look good on your suicide note. Watch all 140 crappy Disney movies. Spoiler alert, it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, no, I got no real reason that I want to do this. It was just another wacky idea I came up with. At least
you did. I listened to your Christmas show where you went over one of my personal favorites, Mickey's A Christmas Carol, and I like that you took a different take on that movie that I'd never seen before looking at the creepiness of it. Whereas I think as theme park fans, we're just preconditioned to see the pixie dust of it all and the magic of it all.
Right.
And I like you're taking a completely different take on these movies. And looking when I was watching Fantasia, looking in that direction, it really opened my eyes to this is a screwed up movie.
Well, a lot of these early films are, and that's what if you listen to the Pinocchio one, that one is just dripping with evil and doom and creepiness. In fact, there's really not too much pixie dust except for when the blue fairy brings them back to life. Spoiler alert, but
I think there's a reason these were put in the vault. But I don't think this one's coming out. I'll tell you, after watching it, I really think this is locked forever now.
This is the last time you're gonna watch it. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, definitely for me. But I think the world. When was the last time it came out? Probably around 2000, right? When they made the sequel, Fantasia 2000.
Yeah.
I don't think they've put it back out since then. That's been almost 15 years now.
Right.
I think if you watch this, we're going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. There's some disturbing stuff in this film that I don't think the Disney community of today is going to put up with. It's just, you know, for their little snowflakes and their perfect little children, this movie is, wow, this is a different type of Disney movie.
Sure is. Well, let's just get into it. Let's talk about the Nutcracker Suite. It's selections.
Well, hold on a second. Mm-hmm. First, when I remembered Fantasia, I just thought it was going to be a whole bunch of cartoons, and it starts off with live actors, and you're watching an orchestra.
Oh, right. Yes, yes.
And it's led by a guy who looked like Judge Doom from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And I didn't remember this character at all, or this guy at all. So that's how it kind of started with. And he goes into this explanation of like three types of music and all this nonsense. It was like watching the beginning of John Carter when they hit you with the history of Mars. It's like, what's going on here? You get all this stuff about the history of music, which has absolutely nothing to do with the entire movie. I mean, I just had no idea what's going on. Did you know what was going on? Did it make sense to you? It took forever.
No, I actually forgot about that. I didn't even make a note of that. But yeah, no, it kind of seemed like school or something. I'm waiting for something, fun to start. And just
here are the three types of music today, like the three laws of robotics or something like that. Sci-fi. What are you talking about? Oh my god. Okay, so I forgot all about that stuff, and I'm sure it was our minds erasing this boring part of the movie, and it comes back every segment, so it oh my gosh, we'll get into that.
Right, so yeah, I guess so between each segment they're live action, and
don't say action. There was no action.
Right, there's no action. Well, between one of them, which I don't recall which one, a silhouette of Mickey Mouse came up, so there was some action there.
We'll talk about that.
All right, so what were your thoughts on the Nutcracker Suite?
Oh my gosh, you start, and I'll get into the parts that stood out to me.
Sure. I see. Normally, what I like to do is go through the narrative of the films we talk about, but this there was barely a narrative.
Well, hold on. The Nutcracker Suite didn't even start off. It was some poop de ding in D minor, and that was some nonsense. The speaker, the Judge Doom guy, said this was absolute music, which meant it didn't have a hashtag story. I'm like thinking absolute music. No, this is absolute. I mean, this sucks. And the whole thing was so boring. And then they finally went to the Nutcracker. I think you're literally forgetting stuff even now, 1 hour after.
Yeah, you're right. It was especially that beginning. That's where the vibration animation.
That
was completely boring. I can't believe they started off the film.
Yeah, it was like music notes going into like lines and waves. I mean, it looked like sperm going through a woman's body in a history, cartoon, or not a,
right,
yeah. one of you, not history, but
sex ed,
school, sex ed from the body. I was like, what is going on here? Then like these big hot dog things came from the ground. This is like the most phallic movie ever made, and none of it made any sense. That's before the Nutcracker Suite. You've just erased all of that, but that was how the movie actually started, and it was interminable.
Yeah, you called me out on that one, man. I definitely just forgot about all of that.
Then we get to the Nutcracker Suite after the big backstory by the orchestra. you know, telling us about how the guy created, like, all stuff you don't need to know about the movie. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll start it off then, because it started off with these naked little fairies.
Yeah.
I'm, like, watching it at first, I'm like, I think they're naked. And so now I'm really looking. And it turns out they were naked. I turned around right there. I go, this is the greatest movie of all time.
In 180 right there.
These are pretty hot fairies. This is Pixie Hollow from Vivid, not Disney. It was great.
Right. Okay. From Vivid, yeah. It wasn't that raunchy. Yeah, that... This one was, I found to be mostly pretty uninteresting and very slow, which is a, you know, probably an ongoing theme throughout most of the pieces.
Right.
There was a part with some spider webs, and just by default, spider webs usually are pretty creepy, so I did give it a point for that.
The spider webs led to the racist mushrooms that were dancing.
Yes.
That was great. I felt like sending a copy of this straight to Meryl Streep. I'm like, you were right about everything. Here's Fantasia. Just play that. And people go like, all right, she's got some valid points now. These mushrooms were, you know, they were doing like these Chinese music, and the mushrooms had slanted eyes and dressed like Chinese people of the stereotype back then. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what is going on? How can you show this cartoon in today's environment? Crazy.
Yeah, it's really surprised they didn't Song of the South this movie. You know, I'm sure they really want to, but you know,
right?
It's too popular or famous or whatever, significant or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, I'm ready to move on from this. I have nothing more on the Nutcracker Suite. I mostly just kind of spaced out. I mean, that's all I can really say. You know,
I had to suffer through this. Then a fish came in and was like scared of the camera. It's like, what? They broke the fourth wall out of nowhere. Like, the fish is acknowledging you're there and hiding from you. I'm like, this makes no sense with the rest of the movie. It never really acknowledged us as the viewer.
No.
I mean, it was just crazy. It was absolutely crazy. But the naked fairies made this segment, so I give it a thumbs up.
Okay, so that helps you get through it. So now we're going to go to The Sorcerer's Apprentice, which is probably the first thing you think about when you think of Fantasia.
Yeah, I thought this would be, I assumed this was the finale of the movie. So for me, it was shocking that it showed up this early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I felt the same way. So we're like, what's coming up after this if it doesn't get any better than this?
Yeah.
But overall, I like this one. What do you think of it?
Yeah, maybe it's the context of this movie. It was great. If you put it next to regular other cartoons, I might be like, oh, that wasn't that good. But I just watched a horrible one that during the Nutcracker's week, all I could think was the pool scene from Caddyshack. I was so bored by what was going on that the music reminded me of much better movies with this type of music. So Sorcerer's Apprentice was actually, it kept your attention with some really, you know, neat stuff going on. What was creepy? How about this? When Mickey walks in, he sees the wizard, and the wizard's like summoning up something, and it looks like it's going to be the devil.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns into a butterfly. What did you think about that swerve? That was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, that was, you know, I think they're trying to say like something's not right here, but maybe it isn't, you know.
Right.
And there was no dialogue in there, was there? I don't recall.
No, there was no dialogue, I don't think, in any of the animated parts. Only the Judge Doom guy talked.
Right, so for not having any dialogue, I thought it still, like, it moved. And in case you're unfamiliar with what happens there, Mickey is a sorcerer's apprentice. And after the sorcerer goes to sleep, he has to fill the well with water, or fill something with water. So he enchants some brooms to do it, and they just keep going, and then it just overflows. And then water gets everywhere.
Yeah, well, the wizard, he enchants them, but the wizard, he watches the wizard does this stuff. Then the wizard leaves. And the wizard puts his hat down, and I don't know if you notice, there's a skull there. There's a human skull.
Oh, yes. I have a note for that. Yes. Skull on table next to creepy. Magic hat. So I have that. That's my next creepy point.
A dead person thing. And the first thing I thought is, when was this movie made? What do you happen to have the year?
This is 1940.
Okay, I was trying... Okay, Oh, that was before the civil rights. I was thinking it might be around the 50s and 60s, and it might be around the civil rights movement. And the first thing that Mickey did when he got the power was creating slaves. So I thought that would be a civil rights movement. But it's even earlier than that, so it's probably a legitimate feeling at the time. Send this to Meryl Streep. Send it to Al Sharpton. Send it to Jesse Jackson. Send it to everybody. This is what Mickey Mouse does when he first gets power. He's going to create slaves to do his work. Oh, my God.
He created broom slaves, yes, and
well, first broom slave, then he murders the broom slave with an axe.
Oh yes, that's my next creepy point here was that Mickey axes the enchanted brooms.
Mickey's got your back during the zombie apocalypse. He tore into that with the axe. He is down with taking care of business when it needs to get done. He created a sentient being and he murdered it in cold blood.
I mean you're not exaggerating. That is literally what happened. So, with everyone's beloved Mickey Mouse, he created magical brooms and killed them.
Why? I never understood why the hat didn't work. I mean, he created it. He had magic, and he was wearing the hat the whole time. But the hat just never worked for him after that point. And he started doing things by hand, like pulling on the brooms and, you know, doing everything by himself, not using the power of the hat. So it was very convenient when the hat would work and when it wouldn't.
Yeah, I have to say, you called it. That's exactly why. Because if the hat worked all the time, they didn't have to do anything.
He did have an out-of-body experience like Doctor Strange. They show him sleeping on the job, and, like, his body comes out of his body and then goes up and has, like, this dream battle, you know, where he's, like, the great wizard. I thought that was pretty interesting how they did that.
Yeah, well, I think, I like it. I feel like this is the one, I like another one, which we'll get to after this, but there's two that I really like. I feel like this is what Fantasia should be. So, all right. So let's move on to Rite of Spring. This is a visual history of the Earth's beginning. So about the Earth coming from nothing to dinosaurs, to their reign, to the extinction of dinosaurs.
In real time. Seriously, people. At the beginning, this is when, to lead into the segment, you brought it up that Mickey talked to the conductor, so they had that segment, and so the conductor's talking to us that this whole section is going to be about science.
Okay.
Right? This whole section just disproves evolution, or creationism, I should say. It's evolution. It was really strange. It's really pro-science. I mean, super science. There's not even a hint that God created the Earth. They're telling you, no, we proved all this. We just don't know how the dinosaurs died. But everything else, science proved.
Right.
And we're going to show it to you in animated form. And then he starts describing the dinosaurs as like bullies and gangsters of the day. I mean, it was absolutely classic. It was absolutely classic. Oh, my gosh. Oh, so
bullies
many creepy
and gangsters.
Things. That's what he says. Yeah, that's how he described him in the film. The bullies and gangsters. And then we'll talk about a scene later with the Tyrannosaurus Rex. Yeah, they acted like gangsters in the 1930s. He'd have a fedora on him.
Oh, my God. That's a ridiculous picture of my head. So I made a note that said the music during the volcanoes. I don't recall what that is. Do you?
There was a never-ending volcano that apparently made the entire Earth. I don't know. It was kind of unclear. But the volcano went into the ocean and then spawned all this life. And then they showed one of the lives turning into a fish, a whole bunch of fish. And then the fish becomes a fish with legs. But before it became a fish with legs, they had a super creepy scene where like a jellyfish grabbed one of those fish swimming by it and ate it, like swallows it up and eats it. This is a horror film type moment. It was like, That, when you think about it, it's like that is horrifying. They show this fish being caught and clearly knows it's about to die and then get eaten by a jellyfish. I have never seen that in any film ever. And it was wow.
Yes. There's, I mean, that's the, it was the food chain was in full effect in this one.
Yes. Yep.
And then the next note I have here is the T-Rex attacks and kills the Stegosaurus.
Yep. While the other dinosaurs watched like a UFC pay-per-view. That was, maybe animals do that when there's a fight. I never noticed that when two animals are fighting, the other animals gather around like a high school, you know, fight, fight, fight. But they did in this movie.
Yeah, I think typically they're a part of it. You know, I don't usually see a group of spectator animals watching two fight.
They should have shown one taking bets. Right. What you got? What you got?
So, yeah, they fight, and yeah, then they just kind of... Was there how did they say the dinosaurs died in this? Did they, or did they just show
them? They didn't
them?
Know. It just became very hot, and they started licking mud. I mean, I apparently watched the Peter Jackson extended edition of Fantasia because this took 10 hours to get to this point. They just start walking around in the heat. Like, they move from America to Arizona. You know, I was going to say Arizona. That's in America, too.
Yes.
But Africa, someplace where it's barren and there's no water, there's no trees, and they just disappear here. And that got to the greatest point of the movie. And I hope you're going to bring it up, what they say. And now we'll have a 15-minute intermission. And we watch... The entire, this is literally, you have to, people have to imagine this, like, don't ever watch it, so just listen to us.
Okay.
You watch the entire orchestra get up and leave one by one the stage.
They showed
all of this.
Real time.
And then, yeah, the DVD thankfully skips out the 15 minutes, but then you watch them all come back in and sit down. It was this, my note says, this can't be happening. Exclamation point. It can't be happening. They all come back and you're watching all of this. It's like some prank. On the viewer. Oh my gosh.
Well, I think they're trying to mimic a Night at the Symphony. I think that's what, yeah.
I wrote a question I wanted to know, because I should have Wikipedia'd all this, that did Walt Disney kill himself after watching the first cut of this movie? I don't think it was lung cancer. I don't know if the dates line up. But
no, they're a little off. But okay. About 25 years or so off. But
this was horrible.
Oh man. Okay, so yeah, the real time intermission.
Yep.
But before we leave Rites of Spring, I did have one more note saying they showed the dinosaur bones after the drought, so it's pretty much the remains of their carcasses and the barren wasteland since this unknown heat has come around. So, all right.
They explained that beforehand, saying we don't know what happened. So that's what the movie did. They just disappeared.
All righty. Well, goodbye, dinosaurs, and on to the Perestrial Symphony. Did I say that right? I don't know. Perestrial. Someone's yelling at me right now. But and this is says a mythical ancient Greek world of centaurs.
Hold on, you're skipping another segment again. You must have got
the good version.
Oh, you got the good version, because my guy came back and said, hold on. He tells his story. This human being is talking to you and says, on the Disney lot yesterday, I ran into somebody involved in the music biz that you never see. I ran into the soundtrack.
Oh my God.
And then he talks, and all of a sudden now it becomes animated again, and you see this line come on the screen, and he's talking to it like it's a 10-year-old boy or something like that. Come on, don't be shy. And we were subjected to like a 10-minute Rorschach test as this line squiggles as every instrument makes a noise. How did you forget this? Oh my God. I'm like, what planet am I on? I ran into the soundtrack on the Disney lot yesterday. What is this guy on? Oh my gosh.
Another case of me checking out. I guess there was a lot of that in this, because I was like...
Oh my God. This was unbelievable.
All right, so I skipped over the soundtrack. Yes, we got through that, and now we moved on to the next part. We said a mythical ancient Greek world of centaurs, cupids, fauns, and other figures from classical mythology portrayed to Beethoven's music. A gathering for a festival to honor Bacchus, if that's how you pronounce it, the god of wine, is interrupted by Zeus, who creates a storm and throws lightning bolts at the attendees.
And this is all being described to us by the conductor. And I'm like wondering, should I be taking notes? Like he's telling you, here's what we're going to do for the next 20 minutes. Like, why are you telling me this instead of showing me this? I couldn't understand why he just kept going and saying, we're going to be showing you this and this and this. Like, just show me. What is going on?
He wanted to prepare you.
And I'm going to lead into it, because right after he describes all these god battles, the My Little Ponies show up. Like, you didn't mention My Little Ponies. Oh my god.
Yes, the centaurs come to town.
No, before the centaurs, they had the My Little Ponies. Like, legitimately, the My Little Ponies.
Oh, you're right. They were just ponies, yes.
Those horses, yeah. They were the cute little, you know, anime-style horses. Mm. You know, that got me thinking about bronies, and that's the creepy thing. So put that on your list. Another, that's actually, should count as 10.
Thinking about bronies.
Thinking about bronies. That's 10 creepy points. Oh, my gosh.
So this, for the most part, this one wasn't that creepy. The only notes that I have are Zeus throwing thunderbolts and...
Okay, way before that, I don't understand how you were skipping by the creepy parts.
All right,
We got to more nude girls. It was great. And it turns out they're girl centaurs. But at first, they're just bathing, and they're nude. I mean, they're topless. So you're watching that, and then they start to get out of the water and they're horses. So that was kind of creepy.
I didn't think that was that creepy.
Is they have clothes. Nude girl... I've only seen male centaurs in my Harry Potter films and most films and Step Brothers. It's a male centaur, so it was weird for me seeing a female centaur. More me being racist or specious or something. So they have clothes, and some of the females are wearing them, and some aren't. So that was they really were full frontal nudity on this movie. I'm really bravo.
Yes,
to Disney for that one, because it's almost shocking how little we get in cartoons today.
It's appalling.
Then we get the naked cherubs, who are these little babies, and they're all naked. They don't even have hints of clothes on it, and they're getting all these girls dressed up. And it turns out they're getting dressed up because the male centaurs are coming down. So like the I don't know if the little cherubs were like the pimps or something like that, but the girls then paraded themselves like they were in Sons of Anarchy, like in the escorts, like, you know, coming down. Who are you going to choose? Which one are you going to sleep with? And the male centaurs came in. They all hooked up. You know, each color conveniently went with the same color centaur. It's hard for people to explain this, but some were blue and some were orange.
Yeah.
And they all took the same color and split off. I mean, this was the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. And you skipped right over to Zeus.
I did, yeah. Well, since we're talking about this part of the film, there's something I'm going to bring up, that it was scenes from this part of this segment were cut out of the film. I don't know. Were you aware of this?
I wasn't aware. I was too busy. I can imagine why it was cut out.
No, it wasn't sexy what was cut out.
I wanted more of these scenes put in.
No, in the getting ready section, there were some centaurs that were in the original film that have been cut out, and Disney doesn't like to pretend that they exist. You know, just like Song of the South, they just like to bury it away. And there were some centaurs that were black, that were very stereotypical of, and let's just say, racist, you know, depictions of black people. And they were definitely, you know, helping to groom the white centaur ladies to get ready for their for their dates.
Wow, no, that I did not see. Holy cow.
No, it's definitely not in there anymore. There's I think if you search YouTube, you can find them, clips of this, but yeah, they cut that out of there. You know, they kept the racist Chinese mushrooms. Yes. I guess they felt they had some...
semi-racist Russian plants. Semi-racist. I don't know if you can call it fully racist, but they were clearly supposed to be Russian plants after those racist mushrooms.
Stereotypical.
Yes,
sure.
They're very stereotypical.
But yeah,
there was hints. Meryl Streep had some hints of truth to what she was saying about Walt Disney back in the day. And if you watch this film, and you'll see what she's talking about.
So that's just a little side note. Just you know, I try not to get too controversial on the show here, but you know, it happened. So
you invite me on. Good idea. What I take away from what you just told me is that this movie was actually longer at one point.
Yes, it was. All right. So Zeus wants to mess everything up. He throws the thunderbolts, and wine gets everywhere. And the rivers of wine, to me, kind of resemble blood. I don't know if you thought that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there was a lot of symbolism in this movie that a lot I probably didn't even pick up on because my jaw was still dropping from the insanity of it all. But I think they were trying to make some points throughout, and that I think that was one of them. What do you think of the end? I thought this was like the strongest. Well, Sorcerer's Apprentice was really good too, but I really like the animation style of this segment. I thought it was really strong.
Yeah,
it's more classical, I guess. This seems to be like Fox and the Hound type style of animation, where some of the other ones they took a bigger leap on.
Yeah, they were just doing. There was nothing really tying all these shorts together. Just they were so not connected in any possible way to any theme or. So yeah, I could see there were just all these different, approaches to animation. But yeah, no, it definitely had a nice look to it. Nice colors.
Yeah.
Pleasing to
the eye. I think it's very this would be traditional Disney, I would say.
Yeah, well, that's all I gotta say about that one. So we can move on to the next one. I don't recall any what happened between them. I don't know if you have notes for what happened between
them. At this point, I kind of tapped out, so you're going to have to carry the load.
Really? You didn't finish watching?
I was spent emotionally, physically, sexually, everything. We're an hour and a half. We just done it in 20 minutes. This was an hour and a half of nonsense at this point. Three songs. It was like one of those jam sessions by the band. We're like, okay, end it. We heard it.
Okay, so you're saying you did not watch the last two, so it's all
I did not last two.
Okay, well I wish you would have held out to the end but anyways, the next one is called The Dance of the Hours, and basically it's a comic ballet, as it says here. I'm reading this off Wikipedia, where ostriches and hippos and crocodiles do ballet. And that's pretty much all that happens. I mean, I only have one note is there's a point where all the alligators have red cloaks and they're creeping over the, peeking out of their eyes.
And the hippo, the dancing hippo, I think she's wearing a tutu. Mm-hmm. It's an iconic image in Disney. I mean, they've definitely taken that one out of the film and used for merchandise or just iconic moments. So that is a key moment of the film, or at least the one they want you to remember.
Yeah, no, definitely, and I know the hippos are there. I'm trying to think who else, but definitely the hippos are in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. They make a brief appearance when they're first go to the cartoon studio. I don't know how recently you watched that, but so
I watched the one they put the DVD out. I'm a big fan of the Roger Rabbit film.
It's one of my favorites. That's I watched it. Again, not too long ago. That's how I'm like, oh, there they are. Actually, I probably watched it like in the same week that I watched Fantasia. That's why I pointed out all the Fantasia characters in there. And I guess it's supposed to be set around the same time that Fantasia was released, I think, right? Because it's...
Oh, wow.
So that's probably why they had all them there. But
knowing how movies work today, it's really amazing that could have ever happened with all those characters from different universes coming together when we can't even get Wolverine in the Avengers movie or Spider-Man. We can't even do that today. Like, that's impossible.
No.
Meanwhile, they have Looney Tunes, they have all Tex Avery characters, they have Disney all together. At least in one day, at one point in time, people came together and did the right thing for the business.
Yeah, no, that would never happen. There's no way. But I mean, the rumors of a Roger Rabbit sequel have been going off and on, but even if that does happen, there's no way it's going to have all those characters in it again.
They're just going to make up generic ones, and it's going to be horrible.
But, I don't have too much else to say about this one. Then move on to the last scene, which is one of my favorites, which is Night on Bald Mountain. And this is the scene where Chernabog is from. Are you familiar with Chernabog?
Yeah, because I go to the Disney outlets a lot, and for some reason Disney keeps trying to sell this devil guy as a pin or a shirt, and I don't think the Disney moms are buying them for their kids. Like, they put out this little ornament on a Disney head, a Mickey ear, and it's Chernabog, which most of us don't think of Chernabog because we don't see Fantasia. It's the devil. Like, why is Disney making the devil on a Disney hat for my Christmas tree? It makes no sense. So a lot of their stuff ends up going to the outlet store, and I get to see all of it.
Oh, right on. Yeah, no, I really, this, I mean, like I said, this is the one I tie with Sorcerer's Apprentice for my favorite. So yeah, this is I'll read the synopsis here. It says, at midnight, the devil Chernabog summons the evil spirits and restless souls from their graves. Their spirits dance and fly through the air until driven back by the sound of the angelus bells as night fades into dawn. A chorus is heard singing Ave Maria, and a line of robed monks is shown walking with lighted torches through a forest into the ruins of a cathedral. I mean, it's amazing. I can't believe that they actually made this. It is so evil for no reason.
Right.
The notes I have here is the first time you see Chernabog appear, you're like, oh, like I said, there's the devil. You're like, wow, that's creepy. And the part they said where they come out of their graves, these skeleton, like transparent skeleton ghosts float up through the graves into the sky. And then another monster come, and there's this huge fire, and Chernabog comes and tosses him into the fire. I mean, this is beautiful.
So it's next level bananas. This whole movie is just, it's hard to believe it's Disney. When you, if it didn't have Sorcerer's Apprentice in it, you'd watch it and you'd be like, who made this movie? Who did they make it for? And then you have a Mickey Mouse short in the middle that's iconic. It's really strange that the Disney company put this out.
Yeah, no, especially this one. And from the fire, Chernabog creates creatures out of fire. He shapes them, and so he creates more monster devils from there. And then some bare-breasted flying monsters come in to fight those fire monsters. I mean,
more bare breasts.
I know this sounds like I'm making it up, but no, this is really what happens. So then, after the battle, the ghosts return to their graves. And then the last thing that was just described, the monks holding the candles is just this row of like endless monks in a fog holding candles with Ave Maria. And that's how they ended it with that one.
Do you think they may have originally ended it with Mickey and they were like, nobody, no sane person can get to it, that far into the movie? They would have just walked out, you know?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, who books the main event early? I mean, it reminded me, I'm going to throw my 15th wrestling record out right now. Saturday night's main event in the 90s when Hulk Hogan would wrestle at the very beginning, and then it would go into the, you know, the jobber matches. It's so out of ordinary compared to a normal wrestling show. Mm-hmm. And this, you have your main event Mickey Mouse in one of the best animated segments they've done at the beginning of the film. It really doesn't make sense unless they had it at the end, did test screenings, and people were horrified. They had to put Mickey in front of it. Hey, don't worry, this is, your kids will love it. Oh my gosh.
It's possible, but you know, I don't think they were doing test screenings back then. I think they were just like, you know. I mean, this is the fourth Disney film. Actually, no, man. Snow White was a big hit, and before this is Pinocchio, and I'm drawing a blank. What was the last one I did? Why am I drawing a blank? Whatever. And they weren't financial hits, and neither was Fantasia. So it's kind of strange that they would take this like crazy. Like, they had two bombs, basically. Why can't I remember the third movie? I'm really drawing a blank here.
When Roy Disney must have took over the company. When he was like, Walt has lost his mind and is going to put us in financial ruin.
Oh, wait, no, this is the third movie. So Pinocchio, Snow White was a huge hit. Pinocchio bombed. And then they're like, this is what they got next. So it was, you know, I don't know. They were just trying anything. I don't really know what the climate of films were in 1940. So I don't know what else it was going up against or what. But
Pinocchio is pretty serious as well. I mean, people, you know, today's audience knows it from, you know, Disney World. And we just see Pinocchio on t-shirts and stuff, but if you watch the original source material that it's all based off of, you're like, that's some serious stuff that I don't think my kid is ready for at 8 years old.
No, it's very dark and twisted, as I talked about when I reviewed it. Even just the movie, even the Disney movie, let alone the source material.
Right.
So, all right, so I got some 2 points of creepy trivia about Fantasia. And they both have to do with the last segment, the Night on Ball Mountain. It says, the Night on Ball Mountain sequence was cut from the film when it was originally released on video. When the sequence was shown in 1940, the studio was overrun with calls and letters from parents who complained that the sequence terrified their children. It has since been restored to its original place on the film on subsequent home video releases.
So these are kids who already watched the nude girls, who already watched the dinosaur battles, and the dinosaur brutally kills him. So they're fine with that. They were fine with the racist black one, because that was probably still in it until recently. So they're fine with all that. And the fact that the movie disproves creationism to begin with, because it says science has already proved this is how the world started and this is how life started. Mm-hmm. It proved it. It's just matter of factly. They're fine with all that, but they get to the end point somehow without turning this off, and they say, "No, this is the devil." That doesn't make any sense. These parents are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they were, but to be fair, I will stand by this last thing and say that it actually is just completely just evil and terrifying, more than anything else that's been in the film before. Like, it actually is that much more that I could see, especially since it's the last segment, why they would single it out and say, something I did when Fantasia was first released on home video when I was a teenager in the 90s, I decided that I was going to re-edit the film with the music that I like to listen to. And one of my favorite things I did was I did this whole Night on Bald Mountain scene, and I just switched it all with songs from Slayer, and it fit perfectly because it was so evil. I couldn't believe how evil it was, and it almost looked like it was a music video for a Slayer song.
I did the same thing in the 90s, but I used Who Let the Dogs Out by the Baha Men. That didn't work as well. Didn't sync up as good as I thought.
Didn't sync.
So, lesson learned. I should have went Slayer. Where were you? Where were you when I was growing up?
So I wasn't there to guide you. All right, one last piece of creepy trivia. I'll wrap this up. Dracula, the original Dracula, Bela Lugosi, served as a live-action model for Chernabog, but the animator didn't like anything that he did, so they didn't use any of the drawings from his live action models.
So that might be a good thing, because it's usually, and it was earlier DreamWorks, or some of these shady knockoffs that you see like at Walmart, where the cartoon characters look exactly like the humans that are voicing them, and that is weird. Whereas Pixar, they just use good voices, and Lightning McQueen doesn't look like Owen Wilson, thank God. They just get the essence of the character. Craig T. Nelson doesn't look like Mr. Incredible, but it's an awesome voice. And it's these other animated companies that kind of take the facial characters, like Will Smith in the Fishtail or whatever it was. And it just it kind of takes you out because it's so celebrity oriented. So that was probably a good idea by the animator, if anything.
Yeah, we'll say it to you all.
I mean, Bela Lugosi's great. I mean, I'm sure there were some nuances, and maybe I wish they could have used him as the conductor, because I'm sure he's a better actor than that guy. But the character design for Chernabog is one of the all-time greatest for villains. I mean, how do they top that?
Right. No, it probably turned out for the best. But when I read that, I was like, oh, that's the... I would have liked to have come on here and said that he was the live-action model, because that would be more interesting than that he wasn't, even though he posed. All right, it's time for me to add them all up, and I have got a total of 17 creepy points. That's a lot.
I had 100 before I even stopped, so my list was a little bit bigger than yours.
All right, well, we're gonna wrap it up. So why don't we listeners know how to find you?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Derek Bergan, DerekBurgan, and you can check us out on Pardon the Pixie Dust through iTunes or Stitcher, and on Twitter for Pardon the Pixie Dust, we're at PTPD. show. So check us out. I think you may get a kick out of it if you like theme park news with a little bit of a less serious take on it.
A little bit. Is there anything serious on the show?
That'd be a good question.
Alrighty, until next time.
See ya.
Then he walked over to the frightened apprentice. He took away his magic hat. He took away the one broom that was now left. He handed him the buckets to go back to work with. And then he kicked him right square in the pants.
All right, the clock is almost about to strike midnight. We have a few moments left. So, first of all, to thank Derek Bergen again for coming on the show. As you could tell, we had a great time recording, and I hope you had a great time listening. So, without any further ado, I want to announce to you the two winners of the Snow White VHS contest. The winners are Jeff Jansen and Sanders Keel. Congratulations. Shoot me an email, creepykingdom@gmail.com, with your address, and I'll send them out. And with that said, I will be giving away one copy of Fantasia on VHS. That's right. How do you get it? It's real easy. Email me, creepykingdom@gmail.com. Put as the subject, "I want the Fantasia VHS." Do this by February 19th, 2014. You do this? I just pick them at random. That's all there is to it. You can have it. It could be yours. For our next show, scheduled to appear, because it hasn't happened yet, and you never know what can happen out there in crazy podcast land, but scheduled to appear, David and Sarah from FreshBakedDisney.com will be returning, and we will be discussing and dissecting and getting all geared up. We're going to be talking all about the upcoming film Maleficent. We're going to review the trailers. We're going to talk about what we're looking forward to, what we want out of it, and just nerd out completely over what could be an amazing film. It could be. Well, tune in next time and, you'll hear all about it. If you would like to tell me your thoughts on the two Maleficent trailers that have come out, or just your thoughts about the film altogether, you can email creepykingdom@gmail.com, and you can email with anything that you want to say right there. Check out our website, creepykingdom.com, for show notes, videos, links to download all the fun stuff, Disney, creepy Disney fan art and cosplay, links to all of our social media. It's all right there, creepykingdom.com. Let me know what you think of the show by leaving a little review in the iTunes store. And, of course, we are available on the Stitcher Smart Radio phone application phone for your smartphone. All right. That's it. Till next time.
Keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams. Ha 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 ha